that doesn't translate into quality software, which is what I care about far more. Who cares if a crummy product that nobody uses is well tested?
Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Welcome, everybody. This is Alan, and once again, I am pissed off at Zencastr.
But Zencastr, Alan, is the easiest way to record your VoIP podcast interviews in studio quality.
I got to tell you, when it works, it is awesome. And honestly, I would pay money for it if you guaranteed me it would work, but I have none such confidence. Here's what happened. Let me recap, y'all. And then the Zencastr algorithm is going to sneak in, hear my voice, and blow the whole thing up. But Brent was late. What's new? And then I just as I was starting to record without him, and it was good. I had a speech going and it was awesome. Brent showed up. And then Brent was coming out the wrong speaker because Zencastr can't read its settings from the hole in the wall. That's a horrible metaphor, but you know what I mean. What I have to do is I have to change the speaker from the one that's correct to something else, then back to the one that's correct, and then it works fine. And then I pressed record, and then Zencastr restarted for both of us, and it went back to the broken way, had to do it again. Now here we are. Welcome to the Zencastr or something. Anyway, when it's good, it's great. So when it's annoying, it's really, really annoying. And I'm happy to have someone from Zencastr on the podcast to talk us through it. And honestly, we're getting value from it, so maybe it's all right. How you doing, Brent?
I'm doing all right. I'm currently looking up to see how we could get someone on the podcast. Oh, Howblin, they publish their Twitter handles for...
Good. We'll ask them. We'll ask them to come on and they can just comment. Because, you know, we have had, and to be clear, Zencastr has worked perfectly for us a few times. And meanwhile, over in the left pane, I see one recording of 31 seconds and one recording of 0 seconds. Neither of the ones which will be published, but we appear to be recording now. So, enough with Zencastr. We just talked last week and we talked a lot about AI. I talked about a lot of the reasons why I left my old job. And maybe this time we'll get to talking about what's next. But first, can we talk about how freaking stupid I am?
We've beaten that horse to death.
No, we talk about how stupid you are, Brent.
Oh, I misinterpreted.
So every year, you don't know what this is, and stop typing while I'm talking. Well, actually, it's better for you to type when I'm talking than when you're talking. Because if I can edit, I just poke myself in the eyes around. Every year, I have a reminder on my calendar in March to sign up for the lottery. Brent is banging on a fucking can on his side. Let me finish that thought before people think I'm all about buying lottery tickets. Every year I sign up for the lottery to get early access to the Wonderland Trail. 99.9% of our three listeners, including Brent, do not know what the Wonderland Trail is. The Wonderland Trail is this trail that goes all the way around Mount Rainier. It is freaking amazing and beautiful and awesome. And every year I want to go do it. And every year I do not get selected for the lottery. And if you don't get the lottery, you can try and figure out campsites, but it's painful and it's really difficult to make work. So this year, for the first time ever, I got accepted into the Wonderland Lottery. And Brent's applauding. And Tuesday morning was the day that I could begin to go get reservations because we'll open up for just the lottery winners. And I completely forgot.
Oh.
So I remembered today as I was, one of the things I do on Fridays is clean out my email. I was going through and I saw that and my stomach dropped to the ground. And I went ahead and went.
Was it Tuesday and Tuesday only? Or are you competing?
No, it opened up Tuesday. So what happened is everybody else who had lottery access, which is not a small number, and there's a limited number of campsites. There are specific places you can camp on the Wonderland Trail because of the bear issues, and they have bear precautions for food at those camps. and also just trying to limit the people so it stays awesome and beautiful. And so open Tuesday. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, most of the day, Friday here, people have been filling out their itineraries and I go. And of course, the days I wanted to go, there's no campsites available. And luckily I was able to do some, and here's the deal. You're trying to, it's 95 miles. So you're trying to figure out, and lots of ups and downs, trying to figure out a sustainable pace to get around this thing. And I had an itinerary all worked out. It was nice. It was like 9 to 12 miles a day, which is a lot when you're going up and down steeply versus, anyway, it was perfect. None of those campsites are available. So I am doing some weird, like 16 mile days and a week later than I wanted to go, but it should be all right. And I'm a little bummed about it. That just happened like a half hour ago. It's like, oh no. So that was, that's me being stupid. But then I was smart today too, but we can talk about that in a minute. Any comments? You want to go on the one?
I only
booked one seat.
So so you're just going to go off by yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. So this one, is this the big like bucket list trip you've been talking about?
No, the bucket someday is the Pacific Crest Trail. That'll take about 4 months.
Ah, okay. Okay. This is 93 miles, 16. So what is that? 2 weeks?
9 days. PCT is interesting. And I've always wanted to do it, but ever since that dumb movie came out about it around 8 years ago, it's gotten super popular. And as you know, and as our listeners know, all three of you, I do not like people.
Thus why he's going camping for 9 days by himself.
Yeah, that's okay. That one's pretty limited. Most of the campsites only hold like 5 to 10 people. So it stays, once you spread out, it's pretty, you don't see people much on the Wonderland is what I'm led to believe. PCT is also a permit system, Pacific Crest Trail, mm-hmm. But there's so many people on it. And what happens there is a whole bunch of people get excited. They watch the movie. They think, oh, I'm going to go do this thing. And they somehow manage to get there's 50 spots a day going from Mexico. And I would guess half of them don't make it the first 300 miles. But for those first 300 miles, there's a shit ton of people around. So, okay.
If you can make it to 300, you're good.
Then it spreads out. Yeah. And unfortunately, because I move kind of fast, I would. If I did it from Mexico, I would choose. We're way off in the weeds here, but I'm happy to share this. One, I got to find the time when I can get 4 months off. That's a whole other story. But if I would start late and be passing people, so I'd see more people until, you know, Northern California or so, and they're all eventually gone. I've been thinking really hard. You know, the vast majority of people do it from Mexico to Canada. I've been thinking about going the other way, just to avoid starting at Canada and going to Mexico, just to avoid seeing as many people. There's advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantage is you're starting off with some huge up and downs in Washington going south.
Right. But once you get over that, it's all downhill from here.
Ish. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, though, then you end your hike dealing with the zombie horde.
No, because you're starting much later. So if you start from you're trying to dodge the PCT these days between getting the snow the hell out of your way before the forest fires come. So if you're starting from the south end, you usually start like in April, some May, some March, but April-ish. But if you're starting from Washington, you got to wait for the snow to melt. So you don't even leave till July, mid-July. So if you go south and you're going like from July to November, and you're ending up in the desert in November, which is cold at night, but doable. And if you're starting southbound, you start in April and end up in August. Anyway, something for me to figure out.
This is
just something to get away from people and get some exercise, take some good pictures, try not to get eaten by a bear. It's fun for me. But I totally blew the reservation system. I feel really dumb. But I did something else today that was something I don't normally do, but it's actually maybe even a topic for the podcast. So let's pause on that. Anything you want to touch on from your life, from your dreams and fantasies, your, no, but never mind.
Now, I had a weird dream last night. I fell asleep watching Tournament of Champions, which is a up-leveled chef competition show.
Love chef competition shows.
Yeah, it's basically they have like the winners of Iron Chef competing against the winners of Top Chef, right? It's super high bar. And I fell asleep watching it. And I had this weird dream where suddenly Guy Fieri was cheering me on and I was one of the chefs. And it's rare for me to remember my dreams lately. But this one, I'm like, you know, it reminded me, I used to always say that whenever I retired from Microsoft, I would go to culinary school.
You know, I always thought about being a sommelier or a chef as well.
Maybe I can see you being a sommelier. My son, like, just to give you a sense, my son, my interest and desire to around cooking is so strong. He was seriously considering going into that as a career because his bar was essentially, let me just do the things that dad seems to be interested in. Quite honestly, he hadn't come up with his own goal himself. He's now almost graduated, and I'm positive to say he's realized. He and I had a conversation about a month ago, and he's like, "Dad, I can't stand coding. I cannot stand it. Hatred. But I want the CS, and I want." And I said, "Well, talk to me about the things that you kind of want to do." He's like, "Without boring our audience, long story short, he wants to be a PM." And I'm like, "Okay, well, let me introduce you to a few folks and then start directing it." And the other thing he's very fascinated about is cybersecurity. And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that one will be good for you." He's right now at Walt Disney World. Did I tell you this?
No.
He and his fiance are part of the Walt Disney World college program. So, like, you've been to Walt Disney World, I presume.
I have not.
You have not.
Okay. I don't go to Florida.
Okay. Walt Disney World, a large portion of their staff are essentially college level people from all around the world. And they accepted both of them. So they're working Walt Disney World for the next 6 months. Like, he was working one of the glow carts. I don't know if you've seen this, but most of these amusement parks, like, they have these carts with shiny, spinny things, particularly when it's parade time. And he talked me this to today, and he's like, "Oh yeah, me and my partner, we sold a bunch of these things." And but anyway, he got an opportunity. Their IT department connected with him. Just out of the blue. They're like, "Hey, we see that you have a CS degree or you're working on it. We have this opportunity. Do you want in?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't fully understand the opportunity, but apparently it's combined CS, data engineering, data science, and customer connection." And he's
a little
just,
of everything.
He's super pumped about it.
He wants to be a generalist.
I'm supportive of that.
Me too. Me too.
Next week, spring break. So you asked my news. My daughter is doing a class trip. Both I and my wife.
Yeah, you're will going be to Philadelphia and Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So
we talked about this before. Drink.
That happens starting Monday.
So nice. Nice.
I have not been to that part of the world. I'll say right now, I don't know what I'll be most excited about retroactively. I'm sure. This is one of the things that I have picked up from Fallout, right? Because Fallout does such a great job sort of modeling what the area of the world would look like in an apocalypse. You then go and look, you then go to the real place and you go like, "Damn, those Fallout guys, they did a really exceptional job." And with Fallout 4 being all about, right, the Boston area, I'm like, you know, I would love to go to Boston even more now just because of the real historical context.
So I've done the opposite. I've done extensive walking, self-guided walking tours of Boston before playing Fallout 4.
Okay. And when you play,
it'd still be fun to go back. I have definitely walked more of Boston in Fallout 4 than I did over days and days of it in person.
So the question though, when you played Fallout 4, right? Did you go like, I have totally been there. Like, did you?
Yes. In a couple places. Yes.
Yeah. So for Vegas, that's what happened with me. Anyway. So part of my bucket list is certainly to do historical sites. Excited about going to DC. I don't know that we're going to see the White House, but we're definitely going to see the Lincoln Memorial. So that should be cool. I will actually have a Philly cheesesteak from Philly. Right?
I did that. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was there.
You are far more traveled than I am. I still have not been to Europe. All right.
I'm going to push off we have to have an AI discussion, ChatGPT discussion.
We do? I thought we were going to avoid it this time.
Can we ever really?
Oh, right. Can we?
So it was interesting. I don't normally respond to random posts on LinkedIn. I shouldn't even say random. I don't normally respond to posts on LinkedIn. Often it is not worth the effort.
Okay. So do you find responding to posts on LinkedIn has less ROI in general than on Twitter?
Oh, that's a good question. People want longer answers, so it's different. There's a lot more posturing on LinkedIn these days. And Twitter's kind of turning into a ghost town.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but there was one struck something with me, and it was from, and he still works at Microsoft. You've crossed paths with Wayne Roseberry before, and he has a lot of good, insightful posts. And he's someone who's still doing at Microsoft, still doing mostly testing as his job. So I know there's very little of those roles like that. So that's interesting, but good for him.
And he's still doing that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's telling a story about where he wrote some automation to open and close Word a bunch of times and found a memory leak. And it reminded me of a story I told in how we test software at Microsoft. And I promised someone a while back, I can't remember who, that I would write the 15 years later reader's guide to that book. And I'll do that this year sometime. But it reminded me, there's a story I wrote on Windows CE. If you remember the Mira client, which was a stupid thing, there was this idea. Remember, this is 2000, 2001. But the idea for a device was, and we sold a couple of these. It's like a computer monitor, like sitting on your desk, like you'd have a pad, like imagine using an iPad as your monitor. Anyway, the idea was, when you undocked it, you could walk away with it, and it would immediately become a terminal server client logging into your machine. So basically, you're taking your computer with you on a monitor. This was before we had the idea of what a tablet was. And it worked, but it was dumb. It was heavy. It was expensive. It was too hard to use on the toilet, I think, was the final review that said that it wasn't going to happen.
Is that what killed it?
Maybe. So I added a story, the paraphrased short version of what I put in the book, saying, you know, that brute force automation sometimes is interesting, because I did the same thing there. I wrote a little script, not in Selenium, not in Appium, not in any of that crap. I just wrote a little Win32 app that found the control, clicked on it, and then found the control in the frame for the terminal server and click disconnect and just looped. I don't know why it felt fun to do, but after about 20 minutes, my test crashed. And I thought immediately the thing you think, wow, I must have wrote some crummy Win32 code. So I looked at it. It looked fine. I cleaned it up a little bit, added some logging, ran it again. And in 20 minutes, it crashed again. I said, okay, this time I'll look at it in the debugger. And sure enough, leaking GDI objects, and it crashed because Windows CE didn't have that much memory. That's all just the same story told a different way from what Wayne told. But Then I said the thing I always say, which is, and I'm going to say it again, I wish more testers and developers used automation as a discovery mechanism rather than stupidly trying to automate a bunch of user workflows, which I have been saying for at least a decade. At least a decade. Stop it. In fact, it was like over 10 years ago I gave my talk on stop writing automation. But nobody listens to me, Brent. Nobody listens. There are hundreds of thousands of people out there writing user workflow automation in Selenium, Appium, Test Cafe, Cypress, this and that. Spending all their time writing user workflow automation. Why, Brent? Why?
Yeah, it's a big test auto.
Okay.
Yeah, you just one small voice, and you know the big test automation. You know, and their lobbyists, they're out to get you. You're just a snowball in their heat wave. Sorry.
I write that, and I go to the gym. So I had some time this morning. And I'm at the gym, and I get a little notification that says Michael Bolton has replied to your comment.
Yeah, I'm staring at it. Your BFF was just like,
and,
yeah.
And way to f*** the story. Way to f***. Nice. Oh my God, this is why I don't reply on LinkedIn. But I checked, and he says, here, and gave a like to my post, because the idea is that one thing Michael Bolton and I can agree on is that writing a bunch of user workflow UI automation is not that helpful.
No, it's awful. It's just terrible.
As I mentioned before, James and Michael and I have this unwritten truce where we don't really... We just kind of stay in our own lanes. Even when I wrote that post, remember the one where I said, not all teams need dedicated testers, which seems so brain dead simple to me. Like, yeah, of course not all teams need dedicated testers. Yet a whole bunch of testers got really mad and said I didn't know anything about testing and blah, blah, blah. And then tagged in Michael and James. That's what they do. They bring in the grownups to come yell at me. They didn't yell at me. As fast as they got was Bolton said something about, well, this author doesn't do blah, 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 which was wrong, but I didn't take it like.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw it in that same post just before it. The issue is you accidentally went down the path of validating the whole checking versus testing thing. That's the only reason why Michael heard you.
Did I? So I didn't
you
in
did.
My post. I didn't validate any checking versus testing.
No, but just before you posted, Bolton replied to Wayne's thing and said that was not an automated test. That was a test, right?
I didn't read anybody else's stuff. Whatever.
Okay. No, but that was you using your intellect, your skills, and a bit of code. To say it was an automated test is like saying that a hammer built the house, right? And then he goes off into his weird checking versus testing metaphor. It was a test, completely agree, and it was automated. I do not understand why it's not that simple. And then you said, so the way I think Bolton is in translating it, the term automation is now a tool. I wish more developers and testers used tools as a discovery mechanism rather than trying to do a bunch of workflows.
I do. And if you think about, and this is a big, big point of mine, I've never understood the interest other than a cool little demo to watch of trying to automate a user workflow. You want to use, I'll call it test automation, test tools, whatever the hell ever. You want to use the power of programming to do the testing that is too difficult to do by hand. But if I want to create 1,000 entries in an address book, I'm not going to go create them one by one. I'm going to write a freaking loop. I need to create any sort, I want to use automation to do test data. If I want to understand, well, what happens if I do this action a million times? I'm going to write myself a little program to do that and understand that. I am not going to write automation to put an item in the cart, open the cart, click on payment, enter a fake credit card, and make sure I get the sale done.
I don't know how far to ridiculous you want to go with this conversation, but another blatant example is, okay, can my website handle 1,000 simultaneous users?
Sure.
Right. Do that as a manual
you
test case.
You call all your friends and you have them log into your stupid website. Even there, you can do some cool stuff using Postman. If it's not your website, but it's an API and you want to simulate some requests, you can do it there. Or
my point is doing it in the manual way is dumb AF is all I'm saying.
Yes.
Right.
But that here's what's wrong. And here's where maybe we agree, but I don't want to go in. I mean, with Michael Bolton is I want to use automation to let me be curious about what happens, not to satisfy some requirements. Like I know there's somebody, I can't remember their name, but they're in my feed and I haven't removed them yet, but they just post these esoteric comments about testing that mean nothing. And I look at, but they always at the top of my feed because they post so often. And I looked at one the other day and it was something around, oh God, now I just, it left my head because it was so stupid. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It'll come back to me later and I'll blurt it out. But I just want testers and that are testing, people who do testing. And once again, research has shown that automated tests owned by the dev team have a high correlation with quality, and those written by the QA team do not have that correlation. So just want to throw that out there for those of you that have forgotten. Every time I bring it up, I used to have the page memorized.
Yeah. So here is, I don't know how
hey,
you
look, it's AB tester. We're talking about testing. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm not certain how you managed to successfully trigger me, but you have.
It's my job.
Testing.
I'm good at my job.
Testing. This at a high level, this is the thing that bothers me. Okay. And I think it's in alignment. There are a lot of people that we have spoken to in the present as well as in the past that view testing as the goal.
Yes.
It's effing not. Testing is a means, not an ends. Okay. Number one. Number two. When you are going through and it's understanding what the hell you're trying to achieve, that's my other problem is that there's so many people who don't even realize it's a means on an ends. So they don't even have a sense of what's the end, the goal you're trying to achieve, right? This is why principle number one is principle number one for MTP. Okay. Now, to generalize what you were saying just a second ago is, okay, if testing is a means and not an ends, once I understand the ends, then I should be looking for the high ROI ways to achieve those ends. To me, it's like, you know, we want to take a trip to Hawaii and, you know, we can start hiking down the PCT. See what I did there?
Nice little.
Yeah.
You're not going to get there.
You're not going to get there anytime soon. And you're going to have a big bottleneck at some point in time.
Well, and let me just loop this into something you and I have both said before.
Yeah.
Because this is exactly the difference. And I was trying to find the article real quick that where James wrote this, but I'm 99% positive I read this and didn't dream it, because why would I dream about James Bach? That would be weird. And again, I will not say anything here. If he wants to listen to the podcast, he won't, but nothing I wouldn't say to his face is you and I have said, Brent, you and I have said many times, we care about quality far, far more than we care about testing.
Yes.
James has come out and said the opposite. It wasn't like the premise or the thesis of his, but he cares a lot about testing. And that's fine. I disagree with that as the thing to care about. But when I look at these folks who are doing what I'll
call... Well, if he's expressing his passion...
His passion is testing, yes.
Yeah, and that's...
And a lot of people like... There's a school of we care about testing. Testing is super important. It's important that we have skilled people doing great testing. And while I can't disagree with the passion, to me, that doesn't translate into quality software, which is what I care about far more. Who cares if a crummy product that nobody uses is well tested?
The testers, maybe?
Great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
You're 100% right.
That's the best kind of right.
To me, he's basically saying, and good for him, right? His talents, his going deep, that has helped society. Okay.
Yeah. No.
But his.
Did I just say yeah? No. I'll explain that later. Go on.
Yeah. But the acolytes that follow him, and here I specifically use the term acolytes, right? It's the blind faith that then take his statements and misunderstanding, in my humble opinion, I don't know if it's an actual misunderstanding, but misunderstanding that he is stating this is what everyone should do. And it's not. He's saying he's going deep on this specific means. That's where his passion is. And great, go for it. But from a business context, I'm going to stand by the side of it's a means, not an ends. And I want to understand the ROI of alternatives. If there are multiple ways for me to achieve the ends, why would I do this one versus the alternatives?
Yeah, and I'll be very, very clear here, because this is, I don't want to say just preference. I'm not saying what James is doing is bad by any means. I think it's because it's not. He's very good at what he does. Sometimes he's a jerk to people, and I don't want to go into that right now. But what we really are arguing about is, you know, given the preference of could we make a product that is our customers view as a quality product, or could we make a product that we feel is well tested? There's one that you and I would choose 10 times out of 10, and another one that people like James would choose 10 out of 10. The philosophical principle difference is that I believe that the customer determines quality. So if they like it, it doesn't matter what kind of testing we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I have the best testers in the world applying great testing to something and doing it things in a very methodical and, you know, using all the things from RST, and customers think the software is a piece of shit, I'm not proud of that work.
No, I was just thinking, because we just had this example of where we did a bunch of testing.
And to be clear, there's an overlap. There's a Venn overlap here. I'm just saying, if I can choose one, I choose quality.
No. I mean, you of course can choose one. Damn it, Paige. Made me lose my train of thought.
That's what I do, man. That's my job. That's my job.
Your job is to get me. What we learned is you have two jobs.
Yeah, wrap it up. We got to end early today. We started late. It's going to be a short podcast, which is much easier to listen to on your commute because you can have a shorter commute. You're welcome. But what were you going to say, man?
So you said if the customers love the product, I think I'm paraphrasing. Customers love the product, then you said something like, how does the testing matter?
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care how it was tested.
Okay. If customers love the product, I don't care how it was tested. Let me ask you this. If customers don't love the product.
Oh, customers don't love the product. It's a testing problem. I'm lying. It's not. Because you know what? Because that happens often from the same crowd. Customers don't like it. Well, it must be a testing issue. It's like, choose one side or the other. No, it means we built the wrong product.
To me, it's quality. And I wrote a very abstract and painful to read blog post on this topic, so I'm not going to recommend it. But
yeah, don't.
Quality is first and foremost, how well does this thing solve my problem? Okay. Then it's okay. Now, what additional pain in the ass things does it bring to it? Like, it reminds me of systems theory, where one of the particularly systematics, there is a law in systematics, which says the number of problems in the universe is constant. So,
oh yeah, we talked about this like two times ago. I'll pound my LaCroix.
It's essentially, okay, great. If it's solving my problem and if it's creating bigger problems for me than my original problem, right, without overusing the word problem, that then becomes the problem.
Yes.
And okay, that's where bugs and such can come into play. But if the initial hypothesis for the purpose of the thing is wrong, it doesn't matter if you tested it well or didn't test it at all.
Right, right. I love the part where I tell you to wrap it up and you go into some big, long thing.
Well, that's your job.
That's awesome. Yeah, it is my job. Okay, well, we're going to call it good here. I got a little something to play here, see if it works here. All right, and we're going to leave you with that. I'm Alan.
I'm Brent.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.